Chapter 38. Of course, there's no way of telling what anybody wants from what they say. Daylight rubbed Bob's rebellious ear with his quirt, and pondered with dissatisfaction the words he had just uttered. They did not say what he had meant them to say. Had I'm driving at is that you say flat-footed, that you won't meet me again, and you give your reasons, but how am I to know they are your real reasons? Maybe you just don't want to get acquainted with me, and won't say, so for fear of hurting my feelings. Don't you see? I'm the last man in the world, to shove in where I'm not wanted. And if I thought you didn't care a whoop, to see anything more of me, why, I'd clear out so blamed quick you couldn't see me for smoke. Deed smiled at him in acknowledgement of his words, but rode on silently. And that smile, he thought, was the most sweetly wonderful smile he had ever seen. There was a difference in it, he assured himself, from any smile less he had ever given him before. It was the smile of one who knew him just a little bit, of one who was just the least mite acquainted with him. Of course, he checked himself up the next moment, it was unconscious on her part. It was sure to come in the intercourse of any two persons. Any stranger, a businessman, a clerk, anybody after a few casual meetings would show similar signs of friendliness. It was bound to happen, but in her case it made more impression on him, and, besides, it was such a sweet and wonderful smile. Other women he had known had never smiled like that, he was sure of it. It had been a happy day. Daylight had met her on the back road from Berkeley, and they had had hours together. It was only now, with the day drawing to a close, and with them approaching the gate of the road to Berkeley, that he had broached the important subject. She began her answer to his last contention, and he listened gratefully. But suppose, just suppose, that the reasons I have given are the only ones? That there is no question of my not wanting to know you? Then I'd go on urging like Sam Scratch, he said quickly. Because, you see, I've always noticed that folks that incline to anything are much more open to hearing the case stated. But if you did have that other reason up your sleeve, if you didn't want to know me, if you thought my feelings oughtn't to be hurt, just because you had a good job with me. Dot here, his calm consideration of a possibility was swamped by the fear that it was an actuality, and he lost the thread of his reasoning. Well, anyway, all you have to do is to say the word and I'll clear out. And with no hard feelings, it would be just a case of bad luck for me. So be honest, Miss Mason, please, and tell me if that's the reason I almost got a hunch that it is. She glanced up at him, her eyes abruptly and slightly moist, half with hurt, half with anger. Oh, but that isn't fair, she cried. Who give me the choice of lying to you, and hurting you in order to protect myself, by getting rid of you, or of throwing away my protection, by telling you the truth, for then you, as you said yourself, would stay and urge. Her cheeks were flushed, her lips tremulous, but she continued to look him frankly in the eyes. Daylight smiled grimly with satisfaction. I'm real glad, Miss Mason, real glad for those words. But they won't serve you, she went on hastily. They can't serve you. I refuse to let them. This is our last ride, and here is the gate. Ranging her mare alongside, she bent, slid the catch, and followed the opening gate. No, please, no, she said, as daylight started to follow. Humbly acquiescent, he pulled Bob back, and the gate swung shut between them. But there was more to say, and she did not ride on. Listen, Miss Mason, he said, in a low voice that shook with sincerity, I want to assure you of one thing. I'm not just trying to fool around with you. I like you, I want you, and I was never more in earnest in my life. There's nothing wrong in my intentions or anything like that. What I mean is strictly honorable dash, but the expression of her face made him stop. She was angry, and she was laughing at the same time. The last thing you should have said, she cried. Tease like a matrimonial bureau. Intentions strictly honorable, Object, matrimony. But it's no more than I deserved. This is what I suppose you call urging like Sam Scratch. The tan had bleached out of daylight's skin since the time he came to live under city roofs, so that the flush of blood showed readily as it crept up his neck past the collar and overspread his face. Nor in his exceeding discomfort did he dream that she was looking upon him at that moment with more kindness than at any time that day. It was not in her experience to behold big grown-up men who blushed like boys, and already she repented the sharpness into which he had been surprised. "Now, look here, Miss Mason," he began, slowly and stumblingly at first, but accelerating into a rapidity of utterance that was almost incoherent. "I'm a rough sort of a man, I know that, and I know I don't know much of anything. I've never had any training in nice things. I've never made love before, and I've never been in love before either, and I don't know how to go about it any more than a thundering idiot. What you want to do is get behind my tomfool words and get a feel of the man that's behind them. That's me, and I mean all right if I don't know how to go about it." Deed Mason had quick bird-like ways, almost flitting from mood to mood, and she was all contrition on the instant. "Forgive me for laughing," she said across the gate. "Tea wasn't really laughter. I was surprised off my guard, and her too. You see, Mr. Harnish, I've not been..." Dot, she paused, in sudden fear of completing the thought into which her bird-like precipitancy had betrayed her. "What you mean is that you've not been used to such sort of proposing," Daylight said. "A sort of on the run, howdy, glad to make your acquaintance, won't you be mine proposition?" She nodded and broke into laughter, in which he joined, and which served to pass the awkwardness away. He gathered heart at this, and went on in greater confidence, with cooler head and tongue. "There, you see, you prove my case. You've had experience in such matters. I don't doubt you've had slathers of proposals." "Well, I haven't, and I'm like a fish out of water. Besides, this ain't a proposal. It's a peculiar situation, that's all, and I'm in a corner. I've got enough plain horse sense to know a man ain't supposed to argue marriage with a girl as a reason for getting acquainted with her. And right there was where I was in the hole. Number one, I can't get acquainted with you in the office. Number two, you say you won't see me out of the office, to give me a chance. Number three, your reason is that folks will talk, because you work for me. Number four, I just got to get acquainted with you, and I just got to get you to see that I mean fair and all right. Number five, there you are on one side the gate getting ready to go, and me here on the other side the gate pretty desperate and bound to say something to make you reconsider. Number six, I said it. And now and finally, I just do want you to reconsider." And, listening to him, pleasuring in the sight of his earnest, perturbed face and in the simple homely phrases that but emphasized his earnestness and marked the difference between him and the average run of men as he had known, she forgot to listen and lost herself in her own thoughts. The love of a strong man is ever a lure to a normal woman, and never more strongly did Deed feel the lure than now, looking across the closed gate at burning daylight. Not that she would ever dream of marrying him, as he had a score of reasons against it, but why not at least see more of him? He was certainly not repulsive to her. On the contrary, she liked him, had always liked him from the day she had first seen him, and looked upon his lean Indian face and into his flashing Indian eyes. He was a figure of a man in more ways than his mere magnificent muscles. Besides, romance had gilded him, this doughty, rough-hewn adventurer of the North, this man of many deeds and many millions, who had come down out of the Arctic to wrestle and fight so masterfully with the men of the South. Savage as a Red Indian, gambler and profligate, a man without morals, whose vengeance was never glutted, and who stamped on the faces of all who opposed him, oh, yes, she knew all the hard names he had been called. Yet she was not afraid of him. There was more than that in the connotation of his name. Burning Daylight called up other things as well. They were there in the newspapers, the magazines, and the books on the Klondike. When all was said, Burning Daylight had a mighty connotation, one to touch any woman's imagination. As it touched hers, the gate between them, listening to the wistful and impassioned simplicity of his speech. Deed was after all a woman, with a woman's sex vanity, and it was this vanity that was pleased by the fact that such a man turned in his need to her. And there was more that passed through her mind, sensations of tiredness and loneliness, trampling squadrons and shadowy armies of vague feelings and vaguer prompting, and deeper and dimmer whisperings and echoings, the flutterings of forgotten generations crystallized into being, and fluttering anew and always, undreamed and unguessed, subtle and potent, the spirit and essence of life, that under a thousand deceits and masks forever makes for life. It was a strong temptation, just to ride with this man in the hills. It would be that only and nothing more, for she was firmly convinced that his way of life could never be her way. On the other hand, she was vexed by none of the ordinary feminine fears and timidities. That she could take care of herself under any and all circumstances she never doubted. Then why not? It was such a little thing, after all. She led an ordinary, humdrum life at best. She ate and slept and worked, and that was about all. As if in review, her anchorite existence passed before her. 6 days of the week spent in the office and in journeying back and forth on the ferry, the hours stolen before bedtime for snatches of song at the piano, for doing her own special laundering, for sewing and mending and casting up of meager accounts, the 2 evenings a week of social diversion she permitted herself, the other stolen hours and Saturday afternoons spent with her brother at the hospital, and the 7th day, Sunday, her day of solace, on Map's back, out among the blessed hills. But it was lonely, this solitary riding. Nobody of her acquaintance rode. Several girls at the university had been persuaded into trying it, but after a Sunday or two on hired livery hacks they had lost interest. There was Maidline, who bought her own horse and rode enthusiastically for several months, only to get married and go away to live in Southern California. After years of it, one did get tired of this eternal riding alone. He was such a boy, this big giant of a millionaire who had half the rich men of San Francisco afraid of him. Such a boy. She had never imagined this side of his nature. How do folks get married? He was saying. Hi, number one, they meet. Number two, like each other's looks. Number three, get acquainted. And number four, get married or not, according to how they like each other after getting acquainted. But how in thunder we're to have a chance to find out whether we like each other enough is beyond my savvy, unless we make that chance ourselves. I'd come to see you, call on you, only I know you're just rooming or boarding, and that won't do. Suddenly, with a change of mood, the situation appeared to Deed ridiculously absurd. She felt a desire to laugh, not angrily, not hysterically, but just jolly. It was so funny. Herself, the stenographer, he, the notorious and powerful gambling millionaire, and the gate between them across which poured his argument of people getting acquainted and married. Also, it was an impossible situation. On the face of it, she could not go on with it. This program of furtive meetings in the hills would have to discontinue. There would never be another meeting. And if, denied this, he tried to woo her in the office, she would be compelled to lose a very good position, and that would be an end of the episode. It was not nice to contemplate. But the world of men, especially in the cities, as he had not found particularly nice. As he had not worked for her living for years without losing a great many of her illusions. We won't do any sneaking or hiding around about it, Daylight was explaining. He'll ride around as bold if you please, and if anybody sees us, why, let them. If they talk well, so long as our consciences are straight we needn't worry. Say the word, and Bob will have on his back the happiest man alive. She shook her head. pulled in the mare, who was impatient to be off for home, and glanced significantly at the lengthening shadows. It's getting late now, anyway, daylight hurried on, and we've settled nothing after all. Just one more Sunday, anyway, that's not asking much to settle it in. We've had all day, she said. But we started to talk it over too late. We'll tackle it earlier next time. This is a big serious proposition with me, I can tell you. Say next Sunday? Are men ever fair? She asked. You know thoroughly well that by next Sunday you mean many Sundays. Then let it be many Sundays, he cried recklessly, while she thought that as he had never seen him looking handsomer. Say the word. Only say the word. Next Sunday at the quarry. She gathered the reins into her hand preliminary to starting. Good night, she said, and yes, he whispered, with just the faintest touch of impressiveness. Yes, she said, her voice low but distinct. At the same moment she put the mare into a canter, and went down the road without a backward glance, intent on an analysis of her own feelings. With her mind made up to say no and to the last instant as he had been so resolved, her lips nevertheless had said yes. Or at least it seemed the lips. As he had not intended to consent. Then why had she? Her first surprise and bewilderment at so wholly unpremeditated an act gave way to consternation as she considered its consequences. She knew that Burning Daylight was not a man to be trifled with, that under his simplicity and boyishness he was essentially a dominant male creature, and that as he had pledged herself to a future of inevitable stress and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.